Hello everyone, this is day 11 of volunteering, 11 of 13, so we're on our way out the door here. I just have tomorrow, which is Thursday, and Friday, which will be 7 to 12 or 1, somewhere around there. So I got another 10 hours in the next couple days here. Today was more eventful than the last few days, you know, now that the holidays are over. Today's January 2nd. Now that the holidays are over, people are actually starting to come in. So Jamie had a recheck that he had his ACL repaired, I think, 6 months ago. So this patient went through some of the ACL testing exercises that I mentioned last time, like the single leg hop for distance. We actually didn't do the cross hop or the triple hop for distance, but we did do the single leg hop for distance, and his legs were essentially the same. Before I forget, I learned a new word or a new idea. This isn't related. Well, I mean, it sort of is, but it's the minimal clinically MCID. Minimal clinically. Oh, crap. All right, well, I'm going to look it up while this is going on. Sorry about that. So today was a normal day. I cleaned tables, did ice, or put people on ice, took them off, took people off of stem. I'm not allowed to take people off. So I didn't do that. Got a couple heating pads ready, took heating pads off. I looked up a new article to read. This one's going to be about the shoulder, so that should be pretty interesting. It'll be a little different since I've been reading a lot of knee articles lately. There we go. Okay. The MCID is the minimal clinically important difference. So if you think about statistics, like the class statistics, you do all these tests to see if something is statistically significant or not. Well, in practice, something can be statistically significant, but still not be relevant. So the MCID, the minimal clinically important difference, is a measure that says, you know, this change is statistically significant and it is clinically relevant in that the patient has improved, like, a good amount. So the example Jamie gave was that, you know, a patient, their knee flexion changes, you know, their range of motion changes from 0 degrees to 20, and then from 20 to 60. Well, that's clearly a statistically significant change in range of motion there, but it's not really clinically significant because the patient still can't walk well. So when the patient gets to, you know, 110 degrees and can walk without any kind of abnormalities, then that would be a clinically important difference. So that's all the minimal clinically important difference talks about. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But anyway, back to the regular report here. One of the interactions today that I had was with the athletic trainer who works the pretty much part-time at OrthoNeuro, and then the other half of the day he's at a high school. He and I talked about FAIs, which are femoral acetabular impingement, which he said was pretty much the most common case he sees of hip problems, that and labral tears. But we were talking about these specifically, the femoral acetabular impingement, so I thought that was pretty interesting. It's basically, like, I don't know if I've mentioned the subacromial impingement before, but stuff builds up, there could be a bone spur, a nerve could get caught in the wrong place, and it just, like, whenever this little area will move then in your hip, it impinges, it pinches it, and it starts to affect function. It could, you know, cause paresthesia, which is like that sleepy feeling your foot gets when it falls asleep. So it's an interesting little conversation. I'm going to have to look into more articles about hips tomorrow, hopefully, or Friday, because, you know, don't really know a whole lot about the hip. And Derek was actually saying that he never really learned much about the hip. I mean, he learned about it, but didn't do much that was, like, relevant, clinically relevant. So he learned most of his information about the hip and conditions with it after school. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So he suggested that I look into it. So successes for the day. Patient was released. That was the one who had the ACL repair 6 months ago. We went through some of the tests with him. Jamie decided he looked good, and the guy's going back to the doctor tomorrow to get a final clear. But, you know, as long as he goes home and does his exercises a couple times a week still, then his strength is going to be equal, and he will be on the road to be back to normal. So that's pretty exciting for him. The other success, I guess, there was a patient who came in today for an eval. He was in endoscopic carpal tunnel surgery. And those are one appointment checkups unless something happens. But the patient basically comes in, the PT or PTA undresses the wound and cleans it, and then gives, well, I guess it's always a PT because it always has to be Jamie, Katie, or the hand therapist, Chris. But they, you know, dress the, clean the wound, take off the dressing, and then give the patient exercises and stuff to do. Well, the patient who came in had already been doing exercises because this was his second one, so he was pretty much at normal range of motion and is going to be just fine, so that's pretty exciting. Today I'm going to talk about articles, only briefly because I've already taken up a lot of time. So the last article I read was talking about ACL repair, and it was going over some of the non-weight-bearing and weight-bearing exercises, so weight-bearing being like squats, stairs, stand-to-sit, all that kind of stuff, and non-weight-bearing exercises are like knee extension, knee flexion while seated. I don't think they went into any while laying down, so no prone exercises, but seated knee extension and seated knee flexion. And this article was talking about the different forces that were put on the ACL, you know, because right after a repair, you don't want there to be a lot of force on the ACL because it'll rupture the healing tendon there, or, sorry, ligament. It'll rupture the healing ligament. So it was just saying, you know, so at this stage of the game, you should be doing, or at this stage of the repair, rehabilitation, you need to be doing these sorts of exercises because they are the least, you know, they produce the least tension on the muscle. And things like that. So it was a fairly interesting article, and in the end it related, it kind of suggested to clinicians how to organize their, or how the rehab should go. You know, like at this point in the patient's rehabilitation, you should be doing these sorts of exercises, and then at this point you can progress to these ones. So it was an interesting little article to read, and like I said, the next one I read is going to be on shoulders, so I'll report on that one as soon as I finish it up. That'll probably be Friday, because the article is a little bit long. But have a good new year. This is January 2nd, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.